Welcome to the Betting Above the Rim podcast. Today's date, April 29th, episode 48 of this podcast. Today, we get into a bunch of topics. Number one, we'll talk about Candace Parker, who just retired on Sunday from the Las Vegas Aces. We'll talk about her impact in women's basketball. Next, we'll go to the Coach of the Year front. Mark Daigneault of Oklahoma City wins the Coach of the Year. I'll talk about, was this the right person to win the award and the impact he's had on a young Oklahoma City Thunder team. Next, we'll get into previewing the games on Tuesday and Wednesday. First of all, we'll talk about Philadelphia at New York, with New York up 3-1, heading back to MSG. Then we'll head to a series knotted up at 2 between Orlando and Cleveland, as they head obviously back to Cleveland. And then we'll get into a pivotal game number 5, in which Indiana won both home games up 3-1, and they take on the Milwaukee Bucks. And let's get started with today's podcast with the big news in women's basketball, and that is the retirement of Candace Parker. Candace Parker that had a fantastic career in the WNBA, winning multiple championships with different organizations. Candace Parker that was, you could argue, was the last great player to play for Pat Summitt at the University of Tennessee, winning back-to-back titles. So I'm going to just take a minute, and I'm going to try to cut it down to a minute, and just give you so many accolades for Candace Parker. 3-time WNBA champion. Those are with 3 different franchises, 16 with the Sparks, 21 with the Sky, and obviously did not finish out the year, but 2023 with the Las Vegas Aces. A Finals MVP in 2016, a 2-time WNBA MVP, 7-time All-Star, All-Star Game MVP, 7-time first team WNBA, 3-time second team, 2-time second team All-Defensive WNBA. I'll just stop and I'll just give you this. I talked about this before the season, when I kind of gave you my Mount Rushmore, my greatest women's basketball players. And Candace Parker is surely on the list. A Candace Parker who really, at 6'4", could do it all. You want to talk about someone that could score into the low post, she's got you. If you wanted someone that wanted to step out and be like a point forward, she got you. Lead the break. Defense, rebound, block shots, whatever you needed from Candace Parker, she was going to be able to do. And that's just her career in the WNBA. If you look at her 3-year career at the University of Tennessee playing for Pat Summitt, scoring 19.4 points per game, 8.8 rebounds, shooting 50% from the floor. Now, she didn't shoot the ball well from 3, but that is something that developed over the course of time, when she got her 3-point shooting percentage up to about 33% over the course of her career. Candace Parker, folks, is one of the greatest women's basketball players of all time. Whether you put her in your top 10 or top 5, she's in my top 5. She's got to be there. She's got to be there for her impact and how she played the game and being able to play multiple positions. So to me, it was important that as she announced her retirement and sent shockwaves around the WNBA, it was important to me to give my flowers to one of the greatest women's basketball players of all time. Congratulations to Candace Parker on a legendary career, and she will be in the Naismith Hall of Fame very, very soon. Moving on to the NBA now, and Mark Daigneault just got named 2023-24 NBA Coach of the Year. And if you look at what this guy has done, and to me, as much as this is about Mark, you could look at this as both Mark and obviously Sam Presti. This duo really, you know, kind of started this franchise over, you know, when Daigneault took over in 2020. And think about this, folks. Like, this is almost an award in the making, in the record, to not just this year, but over the course of his career, right? 21-22. He won 22 games, right? 2021, let's just say, 22 games. They went up to 24 games in 21-22. And then think about the jump that they've made. 40 wins last year, just missed the playoffs. And obviously, 57-25, first in the division, number one seed in a loaded Western Conference. And to me, what's been amazing about Dagnall is the way that he has, honestly, just developed this young core. Like, this guy's 39 years old, folks. Like, this isn't like a 56-year-old coach. This is his first head coaching job. You know, he was a Billy Donovan guy, right? Was with Billy Donovan of Florida, came with him, coached in the G League. Like, he's worked his way up. And what's amazing is the development of that young core, of the SGAs, of the Chet Holmgrens, of the both Williamses, of the Lou Dort, of the Josh Giddies, right? He's done such an amazing job of building that team up. And I want to make sure I bring this up because obviously, you know, by the time this podcast will be released on Tuesday, game four is going to already have taken place between Oklahoma City and New Orleans. I was wrong. And I'm not saying I was wrong in regards to the fact that Oklahoma City was going to win this series. It's the fact that we got to stop this talk of, well, you know, young teams, inexperienced, they've never been in a spot before. Man, talent is talent. That is the end of it. And I thought that what Mark has done, and to another extent, Chris Finch, is the way that they've gotten their teams mentally prepared and they're playing really well in the playoffs, particularly the defensive end of the floor, where I thought I had concerns with Oklahoma City, particularly inside with Williams and Chet. Now, we're going to see what happens in that next series, whether it's the Clippers or it's Dallas. But you got to think, like, this team has a really good shot and should be favored the way they're playing in the next round. And that's mainly because of Mark and his development of these young cats. And here's the scary thing. And this goes to Sam Presti. You are now at 35 draft picks at your disposal. At any point, you can take your chips and push them to the center of the table. And here's the scary thing, folks. He's got the draft picks, and a lot of these guys don't make a ton of money. So now you could turn around with the draft picks, right? And the cap space, you could bring in another star. And that's going to be the intriguing thing is this team could get to the NBA Finals, folks, and they could add a major piece when Sam Presti is ready. This could be fun times down there in OKC, and we have to give Mark Dagnall and Sam Presti their props for what is going on in OKC. Let's move on to games that are tipping off Tuesday night, and we'll lead off with the first game scheduled at 7 p.m., and that is game number 5 between Philadelphia and New York, a series that's been really tough. Right, a series that's, let's be honest, folks, has come down in 3 of the 4 games to the final minutes. A series that New York leads 3-1. They're -3.5 on a point spread as we record this episode. -175 on the money line. Over under 203.5. Why is New York winning this series? Very simple. Jalen Brunson is the best player in this series. I want people to understand that. I'm not calling him the best player overall. That is reserved for Joel Embiid. But Jalen Brunson has been completely unlocked. The fact that he was as bad as he was the first 2 games, shooting under 30% from the floor, and then to follow it up with what he did in game number 3 in a loss, and then to go out and give you 40-plus points, 10-plus assists, and 1 turnover speaks to how well they're playing. They got nothing out of DiVincenzo except for 2 made threes, you know, in the third quarter. They got no made shots from Josh Hart, who had played really well shooting the ball the first 3 games of the series, but he got 17 rebounds. Hartenstein gets into foul trouble, and you got to go down the stretch for having Precious Achiuwa and OG Anunoby guard Embiid. What a performance by New York, and it sets up a spot where it's going to be a raucous Madison Square Garden for game number 5. What does Philadelphia have to do? I'm going to start with this. As great as Joel Embiid is, my complaint with Joel Embiid is I think he tries to hunt fouls too much. He tries to get foul trouble. The one time in this series, more than anything, I thought Joel Embiid just stopped that junk was quarter late second quarter, all of third quarter of game number 3. He just played. And whatever he got, he got. He didn't worry about pump faking, getting up into people. He just played his game. And I think that's what they need. Tyrese Maxey has been good as well. But the problem that lies Philadelphia is, who is next? Tobias Harris and his terrible contract continues to just be a problem for this organization. You think they want Jimmy Butler now? You think they're pissed off they picked the wrong guy? Go ask Jimmy Butler about that. But to me, you know, they've gotten good contributions at the time from Kelly Oubre. Nick Batum has picked up full court. But they just don't have enough firepower. And I will say this. The Knicks are doing what the Knicks do, which is be straight up bullies. They get into you. They get you off your spot when you're on offense. And they absolutely are relentless on the boards. A team that has Joel Embiid should absolutely dominate the boards at times. But New York, with a 52-42 rebounding difference, and they're the best offensive rebounding team in the league without Mitchell Robinson. So Philadelphia, it's going to have to be Maxey and Embiid, and they got to tighten up the defense, and they got to hope that if they're going to play this way, which is let Brunson score the bulk of the points, they got to limit other guys. And the other guys, crazy enough, they may have to limit, could be OG and Deuce McBride. Because DiVincenzo's been tough. It's been hard this series. Hart was bad in game number 4. Hartenstein has been up and down, but it's gotten into foul trouble. We'll see if Mitchell Robinson comes back for game number 5. Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, between the Sixers and the Knicks. Let's move on to a pivotal game 5 in a series that nobody cares about. But I'll talk about it anyway. And that's Orlando-Cleveland. Cleveland minus 4.5 is the line in this game. Now, if you look at this matchup, the home teams have held serve. And let's be honest, it hasn't even been close. Hasn't even been close, these games that have taken place between these two teams. And that's become the interesting take is with these teams with not a lot of experience. If you think about this, every game, folks, in this series has been decided by double digits. Every game in this series, the losing team hasn't even got to 90 points. So it's easy for me to say, well, Cleveland minus 4.5. I don't know, folks. If you are Jamal Mosley and you're Orlando, you have to get game 5. This is their game 7 to be the Magic. Because you can't ask a young team like Orlando to go on the road and win a game 7. It's not possible. They can't do it. So to me, they got to win game 5. And if you think about game 4, that 112-89 win. Folks, they won that game, and Paolo Banchero was awful with 9 points, 4 turnovers, right? But they got other guys to play well. Markel Fultz, the Wagner brothers. You know, Jonathan Isaac had his best game of 14-7 in this series. You know, Jalen Suggs shot the ball less, which is what I think is key. And Cleveland, I just get worried if Spider can't carry them. Because I've never been a believer in the Evan Mobley, Jared Allen combo. Now, in game number 4, obviously, they played well, 21-9, 14-9, but minus 20 and minus 10. And I get concerned about their play because neither one of them could step outside and shoot the ball. And they're getting nothing from their bench, namely Caris LeVert, who was 5 points. So what am I doing here, folks? I'm taking Orlando on the money line. I think they win this game. Because if you really think about this, folks, if you look at games one and games two, they were down by 12 and 14 points at the break. They played better in the second half. It's all about the start for Orlando. If Orlando could start well and be maybe tied or in the lead or down by only a couple of points at the break, I actually think Jamal Mosley may outcoach J.B. Bickerstaff. I want you folks to think about something really quick before I go to the next game. There was a pivotal sequence in game number four that no one's talking about. It was 74-70. And there was an offensive foul called on Donovan Mitchell on an illegal screen in which Max Strus hit a three. And they went, J.B. Bickerstaff called the timeout, 4:16 left in the quarter, to challenge it. The challenge was unsuccessful, lost his timeout. Do you know from that point on, from 4:16 left to go in the game, in the quarter, it was a 14-0 run by Orlando. Do you know how many timeouts J.B. Bickerstaff called? None. None. And he had four timeouts remaining. So it wasn't like J.B. was like down to two timeouts and he had to save it, because the rule is, folks, just so I can teach you, you want to have two timeouts for the end of the game. You burn your timeouts when runs get probably 6 or 8 points. You saw yesterday with Tibbs. Tibbs burned a diamond early in the game. Burned another one early in the second half. Folks, when a run gets where you give up scores on three, maximum four straight possessions, you must burn a timeout. J.B. Bickerstaff lost that game, and I think he may have lost a series, because I think if Orlando wins game five Tuesday night, they will close it out in six, and this game won't get back. This series won't get back to Cleveland for game number seven. Last game on the docket for Tuesday night is a pivotal game five between Indiana and Milwaukee. I'm going to say it like this. Indiana's favored by 3.5. It's minus 160 on the money line. Maybe you wait. Maybe some action comes in. You got to see what happens with Dame. See what happens with Giannis. I don't think either one will come back. But see if you can find that thing is at about minus 150 or better and jump on the money line. My concern with Milwaukee goes back. Everybody knows this, right? I hate Doc Rivers, right? Shout out to Joe Friezo, who's producing it today. He may hate Doc Rivers as much as I do, or I think he's as overrated. How this guy is rated one of the 15 best coaches in the history of the NBA with one title is still the most baffling award that I saw in this, you know, NBA at 75. But it's deeper than that, folks. This team is old. They don't have the depth. I think they missed Drew Holiday and Grayson Allen defensively a lot more than people think. They can't get stops. And, folks, I don't think after game four in a crazy game, I don't even think Tyrese Halliburton is playing well. And that's a scary thing. Because to me, what's made Indiana so great has been the play of Pascal Siakam. Pascal Siakam has been by far the best player in this series. Right? And he didn't have to do much in game number four. He really didn't. Because it wasn't needed. Right? He's been really, really good. And at that point forward, he kind of takes some of that pressure off of Halliburton. 13 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists for Pascal. I thought Tyrese Halliburton got his best game, 24 points. Actually got shots. Remember, folks, he only took 7 shots in game number one. Miles Turner's been fantastic. But don't sleep on Obi Toppin coming off the bench. When Giannis was not, I said he was hurt, and he was not gone to play in the series. Obi Toppin last three games, 9 points game two, 15 points game three, 13 points game four. If you see books hanging Obi Toppin at 7.5, go take it. It may get up to 8.5 for Obi. Still take it. Why? Obi excels in transition. And the reason why Obi wasn't getting the time and his stats weren't bad, were bad, particularly at times against Milwaukee, is he can't defend. But if Indiana's going to run and push the pace, then you got to look at Obi's points prop, because he's going to get a dunk or two in transition. And if he knocks down a three, it's a wrap. He's going to go over his prop. So look at Obi Toppin's points prop. If they hang it at 8.5 or 7.5, run to the window and take a look. When you look at Milwaukee, it's obviously Chris Middleton has been outstanding. You can talk about the play of Brook Lopez with 27 points and 9 rebounds. And nine rebounds. Oh, my God. Like, oh, my God. Brook Lopez, who can't get 4 rebounds, all of a sudden it's getting you almost a double-double. They got to get better play of Bobby Portis, was thrown out early in game number 4. But I got no faith in Doc Rivers making the necessary adjustments. And if they got no Dame and no Giannis, the money line may not matter. Just go lay the points. I don't see how a team that's going to start Pat Bev and Malik Beasley in the backcourt, right? And then you got to get minutes out of, I mean, Pat Connaughton, he's not really not showing much. Andre Jackson started the second half. I mean, they just don't have the horses. And one must wonder, folks, is when they lose game 5, what will happen? Can't fire Doc. I mean, what do you got, 4 coaches in a year and a half? So does Dame get frustrated? Miserable year in Milwaukee. Does he ask out? Does Giannis ask out? Well, you ain't got no one else to trade. Middleton makes a ton of money, old. Bobby Portis makes a ton of money, old. Brook Lopez makes a ton of money, old. Pat Connaughton's going to give you nothing in trade value. So to me, watch Milwaukee. Folks, this could be the end of the Bucks dynasty. Last game to discuss, we will not discuss a possible Lakers game versus the Nuggets because that will be played Monday night. So there's no need to talk about that. But we will talk Wednesday night, game number 5, pivotal game number 5 between Dallas and the Clippers. And what's interesting is after watching that game, and what a game it was. I mean, what a game, a 116-111 win. And game number 4 to tie up the series. Are we wondering if the Clippers are better without Kawhi? Hear me out. They're not a better team. But offensively, you now know you have to lean on your 2 big scorers in PG and James Harden. Both of them, 33 points. Both of them shot over 50% from 3. Both of them had at least 7 assists. Both of them had at least 6 rebounds. And they were fantastic. And they were a dynamic 1-2 punch. But Dallas came out the gate slow. And thank goodness for Kyrie, who had 40, who's played fantastic basketball. Luka Doncic, 29. Here is the issue that I am starting to have with Dallas. As good as Daniel Gafford has been, he is banged up, he's not healthy, and he's not playing well. Folks, I hit this talking on the show on Sunday with Scotty Farrell. If you see Derek Lively's rebound prop at 4.5, run to the window. Again, 6 rebounds, 18 minutes, only had 1 rebound at the break, and it was a big part of the comeback in the second half. Look at Derek Lively. There may be more minutes for him coming forward, because if it's more Maxi Kleber, they're getting Derek Lively, the rookie out of Duke, more time. So be able to look at that. What do I expect? I expect Luka to shoot the ball better and be uber aggressive. Luka Doncic, 1 of 9 from 3. And he still had a 29-point triple-double. I like Dallas to regain control of this series. I think they go up 3-2 heading back to Dallas where they'll close it out. Dallas is -2.5 point favorites, -140 in the money line. Just run to the window, take Dallas on the money line straight up. And I expect a huge performance out of Luka. And with him shooting 1 of 9 from 3, I would expect Luka to shoot the ball extremely well from three. Now, think about this, folks. He's only shooting 26.5% from three. 1 out of 9, game number 4. 3 of 14, game number 3. 5 of 14, game number 2. And then 4 out of 12 in game number 1. This is a Luka Doncic, right? A Luka Doncic, folks, that shot 38.2% from three. He is not, and when you look at games where he shoots the ball poorly, he generally comes back. I think a Luka three-point barrage is coming. So if you want to take a look at Luka Doncic to make a certain amount of threes, 4+ threes, something like that is what something more of what you may want to do, I would take a look at that. I think Luka will play, have a far better game. So look at that three-point shooting prop coming up for Luka Doncic to play better. Like I said, I do like the Mavs on the money line to get the job done. You'll get those player props to be closer to probably Tuesday. Thank you for everybody listening to this podcast. For all things sports gambling, go download that Sports Grid app. Pre-game, in-game, post-game, props, predictions, and more from the very best in the sports gambling industry. Next podcast, episode 49, will be recorded on Thursday. We'll talk about maybe the Lakers and the Pelicans knocked out, but definitely Phoenix. What are they going to do in the Valley of the Sun after a disappointing sweep loss to Minnesota? For my producer, Joe Friezo, and obviously Matty George helping out and Benny with the graphics, this has been Coach Young. Thank you for listening, folks. Remember, it's smarter to be on Sports Grid. Good night.